Let's begin.
This is the Boss.
I'm the Boss.
And the Gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On SB Nation Radio.
And SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Here are your hosts, David Gao and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket.
All right, it is time to fire it up again. I'm David Gao. I'm sitting next to the Monday Night Delight, Carla Dawson. Welcome in.
With charred burn marks.
Oh, she's a little sore. Jose, let me just frame it up this way. What a difference a week makes.
Oh, that's what's charred your bracket.
Yes.
Well, remember,
I'm showing Jose my bracket with all the markups.
I mean, there wasn't that many last week.
No, last week I was looking like a star.
Last week she came strutting into the station. She was the queen of the roost. I mean, she knew everything.
Yeah. I got
she only had about two losses, two red marks on her brackets. This week, it's a different picture.
She was going to laminate it. Now she's thinking about burning it.
Right. Well, yeah. This is, how bad is this, Jose? I mean, honestly, you don't even have to pretend you know me.
Well, that's the funny thing about that nobody
it's
can
gone.
See, yeah, there's the Elite Eight was not good to the Gloss, nor to most of America, frankly. But the other funny thing is, looking at that, and it's a paper printout, there are all kinds of grease spots over it. It looks like you've been eating your meals on it. It suddenly turned into your placemat.
Well, when I'm cooking dinner, because I, you know, got to prepare for the family.
Yes.
I'm watching the games, I'm marking up my bracket, and man.
But a lot changed in a week.
I
even had chocolate batter from the muffins I gave you, Jose,
bracket.
That's not a lie. It's right there.
Well,
right, over there.
You're bringing up all the awkward topics, not the least of which is that you brought in a whole bunch of chocolate muffins for Jose tonight, and they look really good, and here I sit. I mean, I don't see any muffins in my house here. I mean, I'm just saying.
Did you ask?
I didn't ask.
I publicly asked.
You did publicly ask.
Over the airwaves.
Yeah, Jose's not shy.
I'm not going to disappoint.
He says, give me the muffin.
Will it
show
help
me
you
the muffin.
During the break I share one with you?
That's a good deal.
Okay.
I'll take that deal. Okay, we're going to move beyond muffins. We're going to go and break down what just took place in the Elite Eight, and we will look at what we can expect over the Final Four. Really, really fun time in NCAA basketball. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss of SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, so we noted you came in all pristine last week. Your brackets looked great. You only had like two losses on there. This week, not so much. Lots of surprises over the Elite Eight. What stood out to you most this weekend?
Every game was exciting.
It was a great Elite Eight weekend.
It
maybe one of the best ever.
Weekend. Even that most of the outcomes were not what I had hoped for,
right.
I could appreciate the level of basketball,
yep.
The intensity, and
yep.
Just so many different storylines from UNC. I think my shocker of the weekend was UNC getting blown out by number 5 Auburn.
Yeah, and Auburn was not a full team, right? They'd lost Okiki to an ACL tear. That had to be both an emotional and team-wide setback.
In the beginning of the game.
That's a really tough one, right?
Yeah.
So that's a big deal. And give them a lot of credit for coming together. I mean, Brown and Harper have been exceptional for Auburn. And so they sit there facing a Virginia team that barely got by Purdue. I mean, I love what Purdue did. I thought Carson Edwards was fantastic to watch. I really hadn't watched him a lot until late here in the tournament. He's a guy I didn't see during the course of the year, but he does look like a smaller version of Steph Curry.
And he broke Steph Curry's tournament record. He had 28 three-pointers in this tournament, Carson Edwards did. Yeah.
Watch him. He, you know, it's interesting.
Watch his draft stock now.
Well, I was looking at a mock draft that came out before the tournament, and the NBA mock draft had Edwards going, I think, 25 overall. But I think after this tournament, he's going to find his way into the back half of the lottery.
Oh, wow. Especially with the style of basketball that the Splash Brothers have changed, actually.
Yep.
You know, they've really changed it to be a three-point shooting league. So he'll fit well in there.
Okay, so the unbeatable team, the team that everybody said was going to have smooth sailing through the tournament, Duke, they fell. What does this say about Zion Williams, R.J. Barrett, and the Duke team? Were they overrated coming in? I mean, there were several games they barely squeaked by earlier in the tournament.
I think that you just brought up what I think was why I wasn't totally surprised that Michigan State took them down. No, they're not overrated. They are, pound for pound, the most talented starting five by far in the whole bracket, honestly. That's why they're the number one overall seed.
They struggled against UCF. They struggled against Virginia Tech. I mean, these were not easy wins for them.
No, they weren't. And, you know, what's interesting, the UCF game that came down to the wire, Virginia Tech game came down to the wire, it was a three-point total margin of victory between those two games. Now, for Virginia Tech, they did not have Cam Reddish, who they need.
Sure.
And honestly, physically, Cam Reddish was on the floor last night against Michigan State, and then he wasn't.
Yeah, not the same player.
He really was a non-factor, and I think that was Zion Williamson. If you look at his line, he is the first player to score 100 points in this tournament since 2008, so it's been over 10 years. He did his part. R.J. Barrett, you know, he can be streaky at the foul line. He can be streaky at three, but he did his part. You know, last night, unfortunately, missed a crucial three and a crucial free throw late in the game. But Cam Reddish last night, he was the X factor. He was the missing link.
R.J. Barrett, ironically, missed a crucial free throw he wanted to make and then made a crucial free throw that he didn't want to make. What are the odds of that?
That's when you
can't
just go,
script that. I mean, that's just an amazing ending.
No, but you know, they had luck fall their way. And, you know, especially against UCF, Johnny Dawkins, UCF's coach, I mean, he game planned against Duke just beautifully.
Yep.
And they lost, you know, on just a last second. And even Coach K was one to say, I've been on the other side of this before. Well, last night, that free throw debacle with R.J. Barrett was the other side of that.
Sure.
It didn't go their way.
Okay, last week we were sitting here. There were high hopes here in Houston, Texas, from where we broadcast. The Cougars were looking pretty good, but Kentucky's pretty strong.
You know, I was impressed with how tight the game was, because the Cougars at one point were down by 12. They were down by double digits.
Yep.
And they came roaring back. And they ended up losing by 4, 62-58. I'll tell you what the difference was. It wasn't that U of H can't hang with that type of a team. They're so gritty defensively. But two things happened. Is that, number one, Kentucky got all the foul calls at the end. I'm not saying that U of H wasn't fouling, but they were not even on both ends of the floor.
Because
you're talking about the last 2 minutes, minute 30 of the game, and it's a dogfight, you know, in the paint down at each end of the floor. Well, there was no rhythm, because as soon as U of H got a basket, fast break down there, foul called. It happened every time, but it wasn't reciprocated on the other end. So I didn't like that at all. And I'm not just being a homie. I just think there was an unusual amount of foul calls that Kentucky got, and it wasn't reciprocated on the other end. But what it really came down to, why U of H couldn't last in the end, was size. U of H is so well coached. Thank you, Kelvin Sampson. They are so well supported by University of Houston. They've got a great system. They've got grit. They've got heart. They've got leaders. They've got 5 years. They've got guys that have been there. But they don't have the size that can match up with a Kentucky.
Yeah, you could see Corey Davis struggling a bit, right? He would get penetration, and then there was just some length on that Kentucky team that made it hard for Davis to finish.
Yeah, it really did. It really did. And, you know, Reed Travis, the star for Kentucky, he was playing at Stanford last year, you know, in no man's land of basketball. So he's, you know, a senior transfer, or transferred for his senior year. And I know for Coach Cal, that was tough for him not to get a Final Four for Reed Travis. But Kentucky's just, they are beatable, and U of H could do it with their style, but really lacked in size, and that was really obvious to me.
Yep. Let's go back to Kelvin Sampson, head coach of U of H.
Hopefully.
For the day.
Yeah.
I mean, he's on the cusp. He may take this big opportunity in Arkansas, but in this town, in Houston, there's a big push to keep him, and Tillman Fertitta, who is, of course, the
chairman of the board of
chairman of the board at the University of Houston, owner of the Houston Rockets, a heavyweight in town, owner of the Landry's franchise. He has pledged to do what he can to keep Kelvin Sampson. And I think his words were, well, if he leaves, it will not be about money.
Which I appreciate that. It's like, hey, you know you've got a good thing. They have offered Kelvin Sampson a 6-year, $18 million contract, which obviously is $3 million a year. No coach in the AAC is making the next closest one. I think it's might be UCF. I can't remember. $2.5 million a year. So they're sending a message to Kelvin that, hey, we want you to be the top dog in the AAC.
Right.
Now, you know, Arkansas, he would be able to go to the SEC. But do you want to be in Fayetteville? And do you want to take over a program
How
that's
far
in the
can you take Arkansas in that division? I mean, that's a real question mark. In that conference, I just can't see his turning Arkansas into a notable power. But here he is, U of H, and they're on a good trajectory. And really, the last two seasons, you can see his mark on that team.
Oh, my gosh. When he took over 4 years ago, they were 13-19.
Mm-hmm.
And they have had two close calls in the tournament last year against Michigan, a last-second three. This year against Kentucky, you know, bailed out by the refs, honestly. But he's done wonders with it. And his son, Kellen Sampson, is the assistant coach. And I think part of the deal is that Kelvin Sampson would like in the contract that Kellen would be the coach in waiting. Because Kelvin's in his, I don't know, 68, 70. He's up there.
Well, this is going to be his last contract, wherever he goes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And credit U of H and Tillman Fertitta. They gave him a brand new practice facility, a brand new venue to play that's sold out because this program is so phenomenal. So he's built a great thing here in Houston. I hope they can keep him because he is worth it. And they're doing everything they can to do that. Just like, do you know what Kentucky just did for John Calipari?
No, they're treating these guys pretty well. But
a lifetime deal. They just gave him a lifetime deal.
But Calipari is probably worth it for Kentucky.
He is.
I mean, really, think about it. I mean,
UCLA gave him a big fat offer, and they want to make sure they're keeping him in Kentucky.
Sure, they're
going to
keep him. All right, four teams left. You get to take it from here. I'm going to tell you, I think my final two.
Tell me.
UNC and Duke. No, maybe not. Can't do that anymore.
You're making fun of my bracket.
Well, that's where we all were. Wasn't that long ago, right?
Okay, well, here's the good news for you and me.
Yeah?
Out of 17.2 million ESPN brackets.
Yes.
0.04% nailed this final four that we're looking at
now. Yeah, impossible to get it. It just, nobody saw this four. And frankly, Texas Tech, I love them. I love the fact that they're here. I think they've been extraordinarily well coached. But that was not a team anybody saw. I could have seen Michigan State, of course. I could have seen Virginia.
Sure.
But I didn't see Auburn either. So two of those teams had to bust up a lot of people's brackets.
Yeah, they did. I
radically.
Mean, Auburn's a number five seed.
Yeah.
You know, and they're an honest number five seed, where you had mentioned to me earlier that Michigan State, there was a case that they could have been a number one seed, which you're right. And so I think they're playing like a number one seed.
Okay, so you've got four. We need to go down to two and then one. What do you have?
Do I have to be public with this?
You have to go public.
So embarrassing.
Unveil yourself now.
All right, I'm going to tell you what I want to happen.
Okay.
I want it to come down to Tech and Auburn, and I want Tech to win out.
Wow.
Yes. That's
You're
what
really
I want
going
to
for the underdogs here.
I really want to see that because, you know, we've got all the blue bloods are gone. And I just love the fact that both Tech and Auburn, this is their school's first time. This is their inaugural presence in the Final Four. I want to see them take it all the way.
Fair enough.
How about yours?
Oh, I think it's going to come. I got to give Michigan State the title. I think they're going to be the ones in the end. I think there's something magical happening there. That victory over Duke was very impressive to me. So, yes, I'm going with Michigan State, I guess probably over Virginia. I know I'm not really out on a limb with those two picks. But Michigan State's the one I feel conviction about today.
Well, they're definitely peaking at the right time. But that's also what I feel about Tech with this Jarrett Culver, who's very under the radar, but he is dangerous, and he is such a well-rounded, unbelievable player. And with Auburn, how they just rallied with the loss of Okiki was just nothing short of incredible.
Yes, I think they've got a one-game rally, but in the end, they're going to miss him on the court, and that's going to be hard to overcome for Auburn.
That could be.
All right, when we return, we're going to get a chance to visit with Mike Rutherford. He is the college basketball editor of SB Nation, and we will ask him, we'll ask him who the best coach is left in this Final Four. It'll be Mike Rutherford when we return here on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Carla, will you do me a favor?
Always.
Will you trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts? The parts professionals there, they know what it takes to get the job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Go on in and see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
You don't steer me wrong. I'm going.
Thank you. All right. Well, joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line, Progressive makes it easy to bundle your home and your car insurance. Joining us on the guest line is Mike Rutherford. He is the college basketball editor of SBNation.com. Mike, thanks so much for joining us. You're on with David and Carla.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I guess the big question on the table is, how's your bracket looking now?
I mean, about the same as it's looked since the opening weekend. I think I was the only one who didn't have chalk, and I got punished pretty harshly because of it. So I got one Final Four team in there. I had Virginia. So I get no points for creativity. I get the 1-1 seed that's left. So to answer your question, it's bad.
So tell us, we're talking to Mike Rutherford. He's a college basketball editor of SBNation.com. So love to get your thoughts on the four coaches remaining in this tournament. Who stands out to you? Who's the best coach to get to the finish line now?
It's interesting because you've got three coaches that have never been to this level before, and they all kind of gotten there in different ways. I mean, Tom Izzo is the veteran here. This is the eighth Final Four. He's won a national title. He's been well-known in college basketball for a long time. He's had the reputation of being a March guy. But then on the other side, you've got, I mean, Tony Bennett, who maybe has been known for his lack of March success as much as any coach we've seen in college basketball in recent history. I mean, he has been kind of labeled as a choker for the last 5 years, despite all the success Virginia's had. Then you've got Bruce Pearl, who's had a strange track record. Nobody's ever doubted that he's been a really good coach, but he's had, a show cost penalty. He got fired at Tennessee because of off-the-court stuff. Auburn's been caught up in this FBI deal. So he's got kind of a checkered past. And then Chris Beard, who now is being viewed as the next big thing in college basketball. He's only been a D1 head coach for four seasons, and yet he's won 8 NCAA tournament games and produced the 2 best seasons in the history of Texas Tech basketball. So I think all four are really interesting for different reasons. But if we're talking about who's the best, I think you've got to go with the guy who's been here before. And I think Tom Izzo has a leg up on the other three guys just from the experience standpoint.
That's probably true, Mike. Who do you have as the last team standing, given the new that we've all had to readjust our brackets?
I think you've got to go with Virginia right now. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked. This is a weird Final Four where I wouldn't be shocked if any of these four teams won at all, and that's typically not the case. I mean, it seems like it should be logical. If you've made it this far, you can win the national title. But take last year, for instance. I mean, Loyola Chicago was a fantastic story. I don't think anybody really expected them to win the national championship. Even if they beat Michigan, you felt like they were going to be beaten relatively handily by whoever came out of that other side. South Carolina a couple of years ago was the same exact deal. I think all four of these teams can definitely win it. I'll roll with Virginia right now just because I think they're the best overall team. And I think they're finally playing with some confidence. They look tight even through the first three rounds this year. Maybe it's because they've been so stigmatized. Maybe it was recent history creeping in their minds. But I think that performance against Purdue, where they went up against a good team that was shooting out of its mind, and they still found a way to win. I mean, that's the game that Virginia has lost so many times in recent years. They make the miracle play to send the game to overtime. They're the better team in that extra five-minute period. They've got all the confidence in the world now going to Minneapolis. I think they're the favorites now because they're the best team and because they finally got that monkey off their back and exercised some of those demons. Whatever cliche you want to use, it applies to Virginia right now.
And they truly have come the farthest from making history last year, being the only one seed to lose to a 16 and now heading to the Final Four. But I heard today from Bruce Pearl that he sees Auburn as the Cinderella of the tournament. Do you agree with that?
I think they're the most unlikely to win it all. I mean, they're the lowest seeded team remaining. They probably had the least hype coming into the NCAA tournament. But I think to label a power conference tournament champion as a Cinderella is probably a little bit disingenuous. This is a team that returned the bulk of its production from a co-SEC champion last year. They were a four seed in the tournament a year ago, got beat in the second round by Clemson pretty handily. They were supposed to be good all year long. They were preseason top 12. I think they were the number 11 team in the AP poll. They just underachieved for the bulk of the season. You need credit for underachieving and lowering your own expectations. So I think they're the biggest long shot on the board. They also would be the first five seed to ever win the national championship. That's never happened. It's the only seed, 1 through 8, that hasn't produced a national title. So in that regard, maybe a little bit of a, I guess, I think they're the longest shot on the board. But I think Cinderella, maybe Bruce is stretching it a little bit, applying that term to his team.
We're talking to Mike Rutherford. He's the college basketball editor for SBNation.com, and he is with us on the Progressive Insurance guest line. Progressive makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. So, Mike, I want to ask you about Duke and Zion. We were talking about it before the show. I mean, clearly he played well in the tournament. He had an extraordinary season. But somehow this ending feels somewhat unsatisfying. When you look back at Zion and his college, his one season in college, how do you feel? How do you reflect on his performance?
I think the performance overall was tremendous. I mean, this is a kid who captivated America the way that we haven't seen a college basketball player do in a long time. I'm not going to go so far as to say that he had the best freshman season we've seen in the one-and-done era. I mean, you could definitely make that case. You can make the case he's the best college basketball player we've seen in the past decade, and I won't push back too strongly on it. I think all of that also now comes with the footnote of he didn't get it done in an NCAA tournament. That's not all on him. It's obviously on his team. But when you think about teams like Kentucky a few years ago, the 38-0 team, when you think about the Fab Five teams at Michigan in the early 90s, even the UNLV team that was undefeated and so good a couple of years before that, you talk about them in glowing terms, but you always have to add in that addendum of what happened in the NCAA tournament. That becomes part of their legacy. I think that's going to be a legacy with this Duke team. It's certainly going to be a legacy when we talk about Zion Williamson's 1 year in college. But, I mean, if speaking broadly, he did things that we haven't seen a human being do at any level. Just the ridiculous highlights, the fact that he came to college with so much hype and so much intrigue and not only lived up to those expectations, but I think exceeded them and became even better than we thought he was going to be. This is going to be in many ways remembered as the year of Zion. It's just not going to be remembered as the year that Zion won the national title. So I think it was a fantastic treat to watch him play college basketball for the past 4 months. And with the one-and-done era now looking like it's going to be going away in some time near future, this could be the last time that we see a freshman have this type of season, because the Zion Williamsons of future years, they're going to be going straight to the NBA. So yeah, I hope that everybody who loves college basketball really enjoyed this one season while we had the opportunity to have one like it.
Mike, do you think with the one-and-done era that we have right now, when you look at the fact that Duke is gone out of this tournament, UNC is gone, Kentucky's gone, does it kind of make a case that the one-and-done era makes the regular season really exciting for these teams, but it's hard for them to push through to the championship with one-and-dones because they don't have that chemistry? Like you look at Michigan State last night. They had a fifth-year walk-on senior make that big three bucket because they've been together. They've had that chemistry. They know that. And for the Coach K's of the world and these other one-and-done programs, they're starting over every single year.
Yeah, I think you can definitely say that. And I think you can argue in the last, 4 years, since the 2015 title, Duke has gone more of that one-and-done route, even more so than they were beforehand. Mm-hmm. Yep. And the teams have produced less in the NCAA tournament. They haven't been to a Final Four since then. In fact, one of the craziest stats that's been tossed around all day today is Krzyzewski's been to 2 Final Fours in the last 15 years. I think to the average college basketball fan or the average sports fan who maybe doesn't follow college basketball all that closely, that stat is shocking. I mean, you hear so much about Duke. You hear so much about Coach K. You also hear so much about Kentucky and the one and done and their talent. And John Calipari's had one national championship in 10 years. I think those two programs have done the best job at branding their image, their likeness, all that good stuff. But they haven't done the best in terms of producing in the NCAA tournament. The programs that have been the ones that have had the right mix of one-and-done talent or the right mix of elite recruits and then traditional college talent, guys that stay 2, 3, 4 years, really figure out the program, aren't intimidated by the brightest lights. And, I mean, Villanova's done it probably better than anybody. North Carolina, their championship team, had a great mix of young talent and old talent. The only two teams that have been overly or heavily reliant on one-and-dones that have won it all, 2012 Kentucky and 2015 Duke, and for both those teams in their run, they had juniors and seniors that were really, really big, came up really, really big at big moments during the NCAA tournament. So I think you need to have, you can win with one-and-done freshmen. They've got to be the right freshmen, though, and you've got to have at least some semblance of experience on that roster as well. I think that's what we've found out over the last 11 years.
Hey, it's Mike Rutherford on the Progressive Insurance guest line. Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
We'll be right back.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, let's take the luxury of switching gears and talk a little NFL. Because though it's the offseason, there's never an offseason in the NFL.
The NFL doesn't sleep.
One of the fun narratives that came out last week was, well, WWGD. What will Gronk do? What will Gronk do next with this? I mean, he's got so many options. It's funny because when he was retiring, and I was reading about it, everybody was saying, well, the thing with Gronk is he has so many interests and so many things he can do. There's this long, long list. Yet there's no certainty at all, it seems, what he really will do. So I saw that Vegas has placed some odds on what Gronk's next career will be.
Leave it to Vegas. You got to love that.
They have an odd for everything. They have odds on what you'll be doing with your next job.
Let's not go there.
But let's go to Gronk for
a minute.
Wait
a minute. What do you mean my next job?
No, they're speculating that there's some bigger...
Jose, I might be getting the hook.
Well, uh-oh.
It's all about the muffins.
With the cake, well, I just saw him munching on a muffin. And he had that delight in his face as he was chewing.
You know, I'll bring yours next week. Give me another chance.
No, the thing with you that's always the speculation is they love you on radio and they're just speculating when you're going to go into TV. I mean, with your whole persona and appearance, it's clear you're destined for
it's clear
video.
I have a face for radio, so just keep me right where I am.
All right, we'll keep her, Jose.
I'm happy here.
But Gronk's going on to other things. Let me start from the bottom up and some of the long shot. One idea was it was a 50-1 long shot that he would play in the CFL. He's been prolific in the NFL. Why he would go down to the CFL, but that was a 50-1 long shot, not a very likely outcome. But the next one that I did find intriguing, and maybe you'll even find more intriguing, is that he might become a male stripper. 50-1 odds on that one.
That's like 5-1 odds.
No, why are you so certain here? You know, there's something about Gronk, isn't there?
I mean, do you think it's 50-1 odds?
Well, I've seen him with his shirt off.
Right.
And he
can
do
move
the
like
job.
Jagger.
And he can really dance.
And, I think that's, they got that one wrong.
So
I put that 5-1
higher
one
odds that he'll be a male stripper.
Yeah, absolutely.
Candy Graham, here he comes. He'd be excellent at that. There were other odds about his playing in the XFL or the AAF. Those were 33-1. He's not going to play football for somebody else if he can go back and play for the Patriots.
No, I think he would be joining Johnny Manziel and others that can't play in the NFL. He wouldn't want to do that.
In fact, in terms of playing in the NFL, it was notable that, well, Brady saw a post that noted that Gronk had caught more touchdown passes from Tom Brady than anybody else. And it was 78 touchdown passes, and Brady wrote in a comment, well, I hope 78 is not the final number. So Brady is keeping hope alive that maybe Gronk will return.
Sure.
Sure. Why wouldn't he?
If Gronk had posted that, then we got a story.
Yes, that would be different.
But yes.
Okay, one of the top items, and it's a 2-1 odd for Gronk, is that his next gig, he'll be an NFL commentator.
Oh, he would be hilarious.
How about Gronk on Monday night? He would be one tight end leaves, Jason Witten. You bring
next
in another
tight end.
And one with a whole lot more personality. Can you see that? Gronk would be...
I think he would be really good.
A really intriguing addition.
He doesn't trump Peyton Manning for me, though.
No, you want Manning
as
your first choice.
I'd love to see Manning in the booth, yes.
Okay. I like Peyton Manning up there as well.
But Gronk would not disappoint. He would be entertaining. He would be the perfect... color commentary.
Gronk in the booth with or without his shirt on.
Right. I'd go without.
Without.
I gave him 5-1 stripper odds.
I know.
We're
he's almost
not
there.
Having a shirt. Yeah.
All right. You heard it from the gloss first.
Here we go.
Gronk in the booth with no shirt. Why not? We'll see. He's up for it. Let's shift gears then to another Patriot, Robert Kraft, who's not really enjoying his little season. In the owners' meetings, he was strangely quiet. It was as if he almost wasn't there. He was spotted a couple times, quickly ushered into elevators and taken away. But he is a guy that nobody wants to talk to or doesn't want to talk to anybody at the moment.
Well, it's interesting because as you talked about last week, you know, his legal team is working around the clock to find the loophole to get
sure.
him off of the legality issues of soliciting prostitution. And while that is probably going to be successful because I'm pretty sure his lawyers are good, to say the least, you know, regardless of that outcome, honestly, he still has a reputation in the NFL that he has to deal with. And I think that he got a little taste of that this weekend. I don't think any of the owners were unkind to him, but he wasn't definitely hanging in the circles like he would be between meetings and things like that. He kind of ushered a pretty quick exit and things like that. And you know,
the impression, I think, is that he was sort of the most popular guy in school, the kind of guy that when he was in the hallways, everyone would congregate around him. He was a big deal.
The most vocal owner.
And now it's sort of persona non grata. You just sort of stay away from him, let him go on his way. Big fall from grace. I will say this. It's sort of interesting. There are other lines that have come out. It's an over-under. It's the number of wins projected for each team. And despite the drama in New England, and of course I'm not sure how much Robert Kraft's troubles really affect the team, but look at the issues despite that. In New England, well, they have the highest probability of wins next year at 11. They're projected to get 11 wins. Kansas City is second at 10.5, the Rams at 10.5, the Saints at 10.5, but the number one team for wins next year are the Patriots.
Not surprising.
But even in light of Gronkowski's retirement, even in light of their defensive coordinator Greg Schiano leaving, even in light of Kraft's suspension for whatever that means for the team, they're still number 11.
Credit Bill Belichick.
Number one with 11 wins, I should say. Right.
Credit Bill Belichick.
It's a real credit to him. I mean, more than ever.
And there's your answer to, you know, who is more credit, Belichick or Brady? I mean, Brady will still be there too, but Brady keeps getting a year older and a year older. I mean, so does Belichick, but basically he's got such a system in place that no one really thinks they can fall off a cliff.
Well, it's a system because it's a system and a quarterback and a coach, but there just isn't a lot of star power left on that team with Gronk's retirement. No, I mean, there just aren't a lot of big names.
Not yet, but you know, the big names become big names when they get on the Patriots.
Right. He has a way of getting the most out of those guys.
Exactly. I do find it fascinating with the Rams having 10.5 games because you look at not necessarily what happened in the Super Bowl. That was one thing, yes. But, you know, Todd Gurley, we still don't really know the health of them. They've lost two key pieces on their line.
On
the offensive line. I see that they've taken a step back from where they were in Super Bowl contention. I still think they're going to be tough, but I don't know, 10.5 games is pretty generous.
Well, and they likely lose Sue on the defensive line. Mm-hmm. He remains a free agent.
They're not going to re-sign C.J. Anderson.
Right.
So there's a big question mark in the running back position, and that's a big part of their offense. Zach Taylor is gone, who was the quarterback's coach and was an assistant receiver's coach. So, you know, he's with Cincinnati now. It's going to be interesting to me. I mean, I'm surprised. I think that's pretty generous with the Rams.
Okay, so Patriots predicted with 11 wins, Chiefs 10.5, Rams 10.5, Saints 10.5. That's the next tier. Then Chargers at 10.
They really love the Browns in this one.
Amazing. The Browns are in a heck of a story. They're predicted at number 9 with 9 wins, and that's pretty heady territory for the Cleveland Browns going into the beginning of a season.
Can I share with you my new word from new head coach Freddie Kitchens?
Yes.
Whoop-de-hell.
Excuse me?
That's what he said.
He said?
About the expectations on Cleveland.
Well, whoop-de-hell you. I mean, what the heck? What does that mean?
It's kind of, you know, we're in Texas. That kind of sounds like it could work.
So they said, hey, what are your expectations for the season? You're the Cleveland Browns. You've got all this new talent. And he said?
He said, whoop-de-hell.
Whoop-de-hell.
Like, you can have all the talent in the world, but there's one ball and it's got to be shared and we haven't. They did open camp today. You know, their off-season camp because they can if you have a new coach.
Okay.
But I think maybe whoop-de-hell needs to be part of the boss in the gloss.
All right, we'll work that into the vernacular. It's a regular deal. Jose, you with us?
I'm printing the T-shirts.
Well, don't get carried away there. So let's go to the other end of the spectrum.
Would be where my Raiders come in, right?
Well, no. They're not at the very bottom. This is the teams with the least projected number of wins. I mean, the Dolphins, we all know they're poised to tank this year. Poor Brian Flores is joining a team with nothing on the cupboard. I guess Fitzmagic will be their quarterback this year. So they're at 5 wins. Cardinals at 5. Your Raiders, they're a lofty number. They're way above that. They're at 6 wins. I think that's shortchanging your Raiders. After all they've done this offseason, I think there should be higher expectations than 6 wins.
I think there are higher expectations in the Raiders clubhouse, but leave it there. Let the expectations be low on the outside. Always better to outdo what's expected than not meet what people think you should.
I don't know if you saw, but John Gruden, your man,
brilliant. He got brilliant.
An MIT Scholar Award. I mean, this is amazing. The MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference has recognized the Khalil Mack trade as the best trade of 2018 across all professional sports.
You're welcome.
Well, there were only two people in this country who thought that, MIT Sports Analytics Conference and Carla Dawson.
I know, I did.
You called that. It's exactly the case. Thank you, Jose. So I'm impressed. You and MIT agree.
I did. Remember, everyone, I was feeling like I really needed to defend him, and I did my research. And honestly, when you look at how many pieces the Raiders need, both sides of the ball, you know, receivers, tight ends, running backs, defense, offense, and with Khalil Mack and Derek Carr's already signed, done, finished, if those two contracts alone took over 25% of the salary cap, they wouldn't be able to have brought in Antonio Brown, Trent Brown, Terrell Williams. All these people that they have been able to bring in, they would not have had room to do that. And they've been able to re-sign some of their players that they want to keep.
Well, there have been people here and elsewhere who have called you a Raiders apologist, a John Gruden sympathizer, and all those things. But now, all of a sudden, we have to look at you as a high IQ engineering MIT Sloan kind of person.
There we go. But I'm not going to brag because when I did that last week with my bracket, well,
yeah, you got humbled pretty quickly, I might say.
I'm going to say I like the direction they're going. Rome isn't built in a day, but there's a reason for this. It wasn't just a fire sale.
Okay. Another guy in the news. Head coach of the New Orleans Saints, Sean Payton.
Oh my God.
Really interesting comments that he came out with. I know the rule change and all that at the NFL owners meeting, that's fine and that's interesting. But he really was pretty specific about what he thinks that the teams are making mistakes looking for the same mold coach, the cookie cutter, young offensive genius. They all want to find the next Sean McVay.
Right.
And he said, you keep looking for the next Sean McVay and you will not find him. And that's just, he says, you might as well say, well, I'm going to go find the next Bill Belichick. I mean, you can't look at it in one thing. And so he's looking at a lot of coaches or a lot of teams that seemingly have reached for a specific profile. And Zach Taylor, you just mentioned from the Rams, young coach over at the Bengals, is in that mix. But there are many others. I mean, Kingsbury is another. It's sort of odd why these teams have stretched that way. I think Sean Payton's got a point.
He definitely has a point. I mean, I think it's funny. Ever since the two blown calls in the NFC Championship game, he has got an opinion on everything. The minority factor with hiring coaches and all that.
Give that man a microphone.
But I'll tell you what, he is right about that. And you look at just, so Zach Taylor, you went over that. I mean, he was an interim OC for less than a season in the NFL. And then he went on he was an OC in college, one season at the University of Cincinnati. And you know what? They averaged less than 20 points per game. That doesn't sound too
good. No, that's not a resume.
But then went on, he was under Sean McVay. So I think that's really, I think it was the McVay factor that got him hired at Cincinnati. And I think with Cliff Kingsbury, who was, let's get this down, fired, like, bye-bye, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord splits you, at Texas Tech, 35-40 record, with Patrick Mahomes under center.
Ouch.
And he's fired. And no sooner is he fired than he's picked up by an NFL
team. He's the man who made Patrick Mahomes. That's the story, right?
But he made nothing of what he could do with Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
So he's known as a quarterback guru. I find that fascinating.
Yep.
Because what did he do for Patrick Mahomes? I just don't understand it. He couldn't win with him.
No, I mean, Sean Payton has a legitimate point.
He really does.
There is a trend. The NFL is a copycat league, and he's calling out all these teams. And actually, with a little bit of chutzpah, he says, we look forward to playing those teams. And I love that sort of confidence.
To bring it on.
Listen, league, you guys think you've got some formula that's going to come after my Saints? I will say, it didn't seem like that long ago that Sean Payton was that young, hot offensive coordinator, right?
He was
that guy.
That's what's so funny about
it. He's calling out himself from, 15 years ago. But he's proven it now. And he was the Sean McVay of that era, right? And you just can't – a lot of people probably would have wanted to find the next Sean Payton. But it's not easily done.
No, it's not easily done. And up until his – you know, he's found his voice here, where we're hearing a lot from him, he's really been pretty quietly just chipping away at, you know, listen to this line. He's got a 62% winning percentage, 8 playoff games, and a Super Bowl. that's some kind of money. Ching, ching.
Cha-ching. That's it.
So, all yeah, right. He was one of those, and it worked out well for him.
When we come back, we're going to ask the Gloss which team should be featured on Hard Knocks this upcoming season when we return on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
You know, one of our favorite things here is the Hard Knocks series, mm-hmm. where they chronicle what takes place in all the training camp.
Coaches hate that. You know that.
Coaches hate it. Nobody really wants it. But there are only five teams eligible for Hard Knocks this year, because all kinds of teams get eliminated by one of three criteria. If you have a first-year head coach, you're out. If you've had a playoff berth in the last two seasons, you're out. If you've appeared on Hard Knocks in the past 10 years, you're out. So wow. There are three simple rules, but there are only five teams eligible. Okay, ready?
Ready.
The Giants, the Raiders, the 49ers, the Redskins, or the Lions. Giants would be interesting. You'd be watching the end of the Manning era. Peyton and Archie would probably pass through. And it's New York. Raiders, they've got Garoppolo. Jimmy G, he's ready for Hollywood. He looks great. Oh,
the 49ers do, yeah.
Yes, sorry. That's the 49ers. Raiders have Gruden.
I thought you were telling me some news.
No. Who do you want? You can't pick the Raiders.
I'm not picking the Raiders because I want to wait till they get to Vegas. And okay. They're not going to be there next year. I want the Giants. I'd love to see the end of the Manning era. If it is.
You heard it from the Gloss. Hour number one of the books. We'll be back in just a minute. SB Nation Radio.